Hi, this is Michael Dorn, Lieutenant Commander Worf from Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Tea, Earl Grey, hot.
It's time for another serving of Earl Grey, our dedicated TNG show. I'm Philip Gilfus, sitting in the center chair this week, and I'm joined by ship anthropologist Darren Moser. Now, Darren, I hear you're building a new holographic duck blind on some primitive planet we're orbiting. Do you think you'll be able to keep this one secret?
Oh, yeah, it's totally going to be secret. I mean, we are basically building a giant tower in the middle of their city, and then we're just going to make it look like a giant redwood tree, and the holodeck's going to work perfect all the time. I mean, I guess it would be catastrophic if the hologram went away, but because we'd really literally be in the center of town. But I mean, what's the worst that could happen?
All right, sounds like you're continuing the proud tradition. All right, I'm also joined by Assistant Tactical Officer Lieutenant Daniel Prue. Now, Daniel, I heard you had the honor of having a very special tea ceremony with Worf. How did that go?
I did, in fact. And from what I hear, it's good tea.
Now, is that assistant to the tactical officer?
Yeah. he has, like, in the tea, it actually says best tactical officer ever. All right. Well, for those who won't be able to tell by anything by that introduction, we're actually going to tackle a topic that we actually surprisingly haven't done in, 100 and episodes later here in Earl Grey. But we're going to be talking religion in the Next Generation, which I guess sounds controversial, but considering we've talked about a whole episode about sex, I don't know how controversial it'll be here in Earl Grey. it's obviously a topic that's been talked about a lot in the fandom. So I guess it seems kind of obvious for us to talk about it, at least check it off our list. There's a reason, of course, why a board game came before talking about religion. But
several board games, in fact.
We get to it eventually here. I don't know, we'll necessarily talk, bring up anything new, but we'll at least focus on Next Generation and what it did. And really, the more I thought about this topic, and hopefully we'll get into this, I feel like religion is very tight, is a very focused word, and maybe it just needs to be a little bit more broader as we go on. Because I almost started thinking about just like, the way of a culture's life, and as we talk about these different alien species. So if you feel like I'm not necessarily focusing on religion and being a little bit more broader, I'm already telling you in advance I will be cheating. So I thought what we'd focus on first is just basically our crew of the Enterprise D, specifically what their religion/beliefs are. And as I was kind of making my little list of everyone, the person who kind of jumps out the most about the most active, words are just going to be weird this episode, but spiritual life, religious life, whatever word you want to use, was Worf. Like, we seem to get the most from Worf. And I'll just do some quick things that I thought about. I forget the name of the episode, but basically the one with Kallus. Worf talks about when he was a young boy, he went to some Klingon colony where he had this sort of religious vision or experience, gazing into the fire. And in this episode of when he sort of quote unquote discovers Kallus, he has that same thing of where he's sort of meditating in the fire. But with Worf, I don't know if Klingon religion is necessarily the right concept or phrase, but Worf certainly has this very rich cultural belief life. It's not just the code of honor, not the episode, because we don't talk about that, but just like what he believes, the ways of the warrior, the rituals he performs, whether it's ritual suicide or tea ceremonies or all these different things. So, Darren, when it comes to Worf, what do you think we kind of saw about, what he believes and what guides him?
Yeah, I mean, Worf is a great character to start off with because he himself has just short of Klingon Jesus, he has the most impact and connection with Klingon spirituality than any Klingon we see. He discovers Kalis. He, you know, is responsible for appointing him the, not the chancellor, but he becomes
the emperor.
The emperor, yes. The figurehead emperor. And he just, I don't know, he's so, not religious, but he's so into the doctrine of the Klingon mantra, I guess. There's a bunch of Scrabble words. But, you know, he's just an interesting character to follow because he's looking from the outside, yet he's our lens to this society, yet he's not living in it. He's never lived in Klingon society. He's only lived through textbooks and what, you know, his parents told him, which can't be the whole thing. But he takes it very seriously. And, I mean, his wedding was very traditional Klingon.
Darren, we don't.
I mean, we didn't, because of that tradition, the wedding party had to be so small. I think that's part on the, it's the, in the eighth book of Kalis, it says that wedding party must be three members thus.
Three members per
three is the number that five, they shall be. Sire.
Three is the number of counting, and
not two, unless it is followed thus by three. Four
has counted to four, and has counted too far.
Eight is right out. But yeah, but no, Worf. Gosh, you could fill a whole book on just the way he interacts with his society. But I think, like you said, that episode where he discovers the clone of Kalis is probably the antithesis, where he has a vision and it like comes to life. I mean, that's, and again, he's skeptical, but he sees past the reality to what it could mean for his society, which I think is the best.
And hopefully one of y'all will Google this while I'm talking, but that episode is very interesting, because as you said, Darren, that actually, and I might, you know, that's one maybe to rewatch, because it is about the power of belief, because as you said, he questions it, and he questions it so much that he figures it out, it's a lie, it's a clone, it's a genetic. But then Worf is also the one who says, you know what, the power of belief is more important than the facts, and that by making him an emperor, he can be a spiritual, against the wrong word, but spiritual cultural leader for our empire that needs our beliefs to be strengthened. And so it's a very interesting dichotomy. And also, for those of you wanting to use New Testament analogy generators, Darren, if Kalis is a Klingon Jesus, that does make Worf Klingon Mary Magdalene.
Okay, there we go. There we go.
Who first saw? Anyway, but we won't go. We'll let Metatrix do that. But Daniel, what do you think about Worf and sort of, you know, his, you know, and again, I'm struggling for the right words, but hopefully you know what I'm saying, you know, because he is the epitome of Klingon beliefs, whether they're the actual beliefs or what his version is, but he certainly seems to have a rich cultural, spiritual life.
Okay, I found it. It is rightful heir. It is the 23rd book of season 6.
The 23rd book of season 6. Oh, boy. I believe there's probably certain things that you can conjecture from the conversation that we're going to have, certain viewpoints that we have different ways of looking at this. Certainly, the three of us do. We're three different people with three different opinions, and it'll be interesting to see how this goes. That being said, Worf's journey, from what his understanding of Klingon culture, being a Klingon, you know, being a warrior is one of disillusionment. One of harsh reality kind of slapping him in the face, as opposed to what he has kind of always idolized it to be, right? So he finally gets to kind of hang out with his Klingon buddies for the first time, and then he gets discommodated, and he finds out that not all of everybody is super awesome, honor-filled, great warriors that lived for the, you know, there's corruption, right? In the same way with Rightful Heir, he also learns that there's just a bunch of people sitting on the side of a mountain, you know, just kind of chilling there forever. And then he finds out that they're worshiping this clone. This isn't real religion. This isn't real what he expected, at least, I should say. And that's actually a really interesting journey for me, because he's ultimately always confronted with the truth. And he finds his own way to accept that truth and still kind of look at this whole situation with, I want to say, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, but he accepts it and then still goes along with the good of the empire. Whether it's, like I said, culturally, whether it's politically, now we're talking spiritually. And that's a kind of an interesting character arc. He kind of falls on the sword in a lot of ways.
Bat-leth, Daniel.
Bat-leth, sorry. He falls on the bat-leth in a lot of these episodes. He's a martyr in a lot of ways. First with his discommodation, then with this whole thing, and then, of course, continuing into Deep Space Nine. So it is actually a really interesting way of looking at this topic through Worf's eyes, anyways.
Yeah, and I think about, again, this more talking about this episode, because you have Gowron representing the state, or the civic religion, if you want to really get into this, I suppose. You know, and he's sort of like, you know, unmasked Kallus when he sort of beats them up, and like, this guy, am I right? But then you sort of have the priest, and again, that might be the wrong word, the one who made the clones. And, you know, it's just this very interesting mix of, like, what does the Empire need when maybe it has a strong political, well, I don't know at that time. But anyway, because you had the Civil War and Romulans and Duras and all that. But, you know, the need for the Klingon Empire to be strong again, not, you know, just in weapons, but in something else that, you know, whether if you want to call it civic religion or cultural beliefs, that will unite all the Klingons. And maybe that's just because they did fight a civil war. They needed something to rally around other than, like, you know, conquering another species.
See, now I want to see all those memes of the Klingon Civil War where it's like Gowron and Worf, kind of like you had Cap and Iron Man, and they just talk about dumb things like Gok is best served live, Gok is best served dead, Civil War. But we need like 100 of those.
And we just need them fighting for like 3/4 of the episode. Enough of Elsa. But and it's, of course, there's also an interesting parallel, because I talked about war.
Yeah.
About him trying to, you know, drag his kid to church every Sunday, you know, trying to teach or instruct Alexander in this, you know, code of honor or whatever you want to call it. And Alexander's having none of it, you know, of like, you know, I don't, you know, that's not what mom taught me. She didn't believe in any of your Klingon nonsense. And so you sort of have that way of that can be in real life, you know, of how children can decide or how much you let them instruct them in the sort of spiritual life. But that was sort of anything else about Worf, because like I said, he's to me is sort of the easiest to go through. And I think about, and I can't remember which episode this is, I remember there's a scene with Worf and Picard where, actually there's two in two different episodes, where the one I'm thinking of immediately is where, like, Picard's like, you know, it is, you know, I have X different species here in the Enterprise, and I try to let everyone, you know, have their beliefs, and, you know, God knows I'm probably not good at it. And Worf's like, no, sir, I've always been very respectful. But then there's another episode where it's a much more harsher conversation where Picard's like, you know, you can have your spiritual beliefs, you know, to a point, and then when it interferes, you know, that's when I sort
of, I think that's around
the
one where he wants to commit, you know,
ethics.
Yeah, I think that's the one where he wants to kill himself. I think that's where he's like, is either that, or is it the one where where Kalar dies and he wants to seek revenge?
Oh, kill Duras.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's like, you can't do that. And he's like, well, too bad, I already did.
Yeah. Better to, you know,
ask forgiveness
than permission.
That's the Federation way. Bend that, bend that prime directive as much as you can.
Bend it like Becca. The next person I thought about, and this is just me, was Data. And I know that seems like very odd to bring up in the context of religion. You'd think like, well, that'd be like the last person I would think of. But Data, because he's on this quest for humanity, as a Q would call it, he certainly has he's very existentialist about, you know, what is the nature of things? What is the nature of his existence? And of course, he gets a very literal interpretation when he meets his creator and brothers. But, you know, there's times when he reflects on his mortality, that actually makes him feel good, that he knows that I think that's actually from, of all things, you know, everyone's favorite two-parter in the 19th century. But did I think actually says, if I'm not mistaken, he tells Jordy that it actually feels good that he knows he'll die. That makes him feel more human. But I mean, Daniel, did you ever find Data to be very, you know, probing into sort of the more metaphysical, even though he, of course, is the most logical, or if that's the right word, of them all?
That's a tough question for me. Again, you know, revealing my opinion, how I kind of, the lens that I view it through. I would never have placed those questions in the realm of religious or spiritual questions. I mean, I would say that they're philosophical questions, certainly. The way that Data views Soong, the way that he views himself, the way that he views humanity. Obviously, these are very deep, very philosophical questions about humanity, which Star Trek does very well. I think there are many elements of what you would call religion or spirituality missing from that. And I think done intentionally. So I don't think you can conflate those two. I think if you're doing that, you're kind of doing a disservice to what the Data character is trying to come across. But I can also see why you might think that. But it never, ever came to me. It never, never, ever came across as to me as like a religious journey for Data. It's almost more of a self-reflection kind of a journey. It's a personal journey. It's more of a deeply reflective kind of a thing that he goes through.
To the journey. because he has that very literal, you know, and how many of us get this opportunity? Well, I suppose you could ask your parents, but you know, like, why did you create me? I mean, because this is a much more larger question. You know, sort of the V'ger motion picture question all over again. You know, the creator, you know, wishes to merge. You know, and we get the very, very cool, I think, I love the Soon analogy of, you know, or the parable, if you will, of, you know, him telling about old things and new things and the nature of immortality. So, what about you, Darren? Did you ever get any sort of metaphysical questions from Mr. Data?
Well, I mean, when he's not partaking in Shakespeare and he's not forgetting who he is and rediscovering it, you know, yeah, Data... Again, because Data is our most prominent lens on humanity. I mean, that's what most of the episodes that he's in are about, other than, you know, that and awesome time travel adventures with Mark Twain. But, you know...
You're hurting me!
But when... I think the best moments for Data are the subtlest, where he'll say something and... And again, I know it doesn't have to do with religion, but again, I keep being drawn back to the moment in The Measure of a Man where he's asking Picard why all crew members don't have their eyes removed, you know, like Geordi. And just that moment where, I guess this is the tone I'm speaking of, is when Picard makes that realization and he's just like, that'll be all, Data. And he just realizes, oh man, Data just dropped some knowledge on me and I am so in the wrong. And or a similar one where he goes to Picard and says, I'm just wondering why you haven't given me a ship yet, because everyone else has one. He's like, oh, I think the Sutherland could use a captain. Get out. And those moments, I think, when they come about and discussing the human condition and discussing, you know, love and why we make decisions and who we are as a person. I mean, those are all very. You know, what is the star that Data follows? You know, not second star to the right, but, you know, with the fact that he emulates so much of his personality and his decisions off of the Starfleet personnel that found him. What if a Klingon ship had found him? You know, would he be serving on board, you know, headbutting lieutenants left and right? I think he could do well on a Klingon ship. But all that to say, I think, like I said, it's those subtle moments with Data where you really get thinking.
Yeah. And then, and put Picard aside for a second here. And I sort of struggled to have any kind of thing shown with any of the other characters. Now, let it be noted, of course, that so far the two we have talked about are aliens. We have a Klingon and an android, even though a very human android. But when it comes to, you know, Riker, LaForge, Troy, who I know is half alien, or Crusher, or Crushers, if you prefer. You know, I couldn't really think of anything, which is probably because there's nothing there. But did you, is there anything you all think any of those characters have as far as any references to either themselves or their family or anything else?
I would say Ro in, the next phase? Is that the one?
Definitely.
Where she's having to confront her own, thinking she's dead, and she starts quoting all these things that she read about as a little girl that she never really believed. And then, of course, Geordi drops some knowledge. He's like, wait, so I'm a blind ghost in my uniform? That doesn't make sense. But I think, even though Ro doesn't really go into that very often, I think it's probably the only time where she really talks. I mean, you get Kira probably, you know, 9 out of 10 will talk about the prophets, whereas Ro is like 1 out of 10. But in this episode, she's very shaken because she's like, from all I can tell, I'm dead. But what is this? I'm on the other side. What is going on? And what does that mean? And, you know, should I have remembered more of the teachings of my people? So that, I think, is a, you know, as she's asking a lot of the questions a lot of us ask. You know, we're not quite phased out of existence, but, you know, this, we can relate.
Sure. And Daniel, I know Ro is your character, and I'm trying to...
Wait, so I can't talk about Ro? Because
you can't. You've been canceled. But like, you know, Daniel, I'm trying to think about Ro. I almost didn't list her because I, in my mind, I'm mixed about how much Bajoran religion was actually talked about in Next Gen. Because I'm feel like, you know, like Deep Space Nine, obviously, but I'm like, did we actually like, was the word prophet ever mentioned in TNG? Maybe it was, but I'm, so. And then,
well, there's the Bajora, which is why,
yeah, well, that's true.
They didn't believe
in the prophets,
the sphere builders is what they went by.
but Daniel, Ro, you know, not a lot of episodes I know, but certainly I know you've thought about her. Is she, cult, you know, and I know you'll know what I'm saying here. Is she culturally Bajoran? In her beliefs,
yes.
Or is
she? Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that episode, the next phase, is exactly about that. She says, I was told these stories as a child. I never believed them. Now I'm literally confronted with a situation where I have to reevaluate them. You know, I'm confronted with a situation that is beyond anything I understand. And I need to frame them in a context that I can deal with. And, it's interesting, but, you know, it fits really well into the Deep Space Nine Bajoran narrative. I actually don't buy it for the Ro character. I think Ro is more pragmatic than that. Although, of course, that is an extreme situation. So in extremes, people generally tend to kind of go to extremes. But I definitely find her more pragmatic than Kira. But it is interesting to see her contrast between her and Geordi, and that was actually probably one of my favorite elements of the next phase, and her just kind of letting go of everything she understands and accepting whatever she was told, you know, as a younger person, and then Geordi fighting against that, being like, wait a minute, none of this makes sense, and it was a really interesting part of that character and a part of that arc, and I really enjoyed it. Unfortunately, to answer your question, I think we get too little of it, you know, other than in the next phase and only briefly. We're just not told enough how much of importance it is to Ro. So, you know, it's a cool kind of a way to tie it into like the Deep Space Nine kind of mythology as well. I don't know. We don't really delve into it enough, I would say.
And again, I don't want to put too much Deep Space Nine into Ro's story, but like, for instance, I'm not saying, you know, obviously, so like, she obviously wears the Bajoran earring. Now, is that a symbol of Bajoran faith, or is that, I mean, in other words, like, I know it's just Bajoran culture, which is, but I mean, literally, is that earring a symbol of faith that she just wears because she's culturally Bajoran, or because, I mean, that's sort of the infamous thing, right? In her first episode, that's her fight, her symbolic fight, I get to wear my earring. You know, so what is she holding on to there? Is that just the culture of Bajora, even though that is a symbol of faith, or what is that? Do you think?
Yeah, I do. I think it's essentially she's wearing like a cross necklace,
Or you know, Bajaj?
I apologize. I was contextualizing it in Western society, American Western society, what I'm used to, you know, seeing. Yeah, it is I think for her, it is a symbol of her culture, not a symbol of her religion. I don't think she particularly has any religion. And I think both before and after the next phase, she has no religion, essentially. I think before, she just doesn't think about it. I think after, she kind of has to maybe to reevaluate it, but it's never really addressed. So it's hard to kind of say where she's at. But yeah, I do. I think obviously quote unquote, what we would say, she identifies as a Bajora, right? She culturally identifies as that.
But she goes to temple on the high Bajoran holidays, right.
She goes twice a year.
You know, right after she goes to temple, maybe she drinks a little spring wine and has some fun. You know, but I'm teasing, of course. But she identifies with her people, and it's a very strong cultural connection. I don't see her as a, like, Kira is a very strong religious person. I don't see her that way at all. Not even a little bit.
So, Darren, I'll give you one last Ro question. What would Ro's orb experience be? What orb would it be?
The orb of I told you so. No. I would say maybe the orb of time, and not push her through time, but let her see how her past has really shaped her in a good way, because she seems to really hate her past. But that could be interesting. Another, even though it's really, really minor, but it made me think of Data's Day, because you have a wedding in that. And while, you know, all weddings aren't necessarily religious, a lot of cultures, there is a lot built around it. But unfortunately, we don't really get a lot of subtext from that from Keiko O'Brien, except for she's wearing kind of traditional, you know, Japanese type clothing, but that's it. There doesn't seem to be any other, you know, we get more from a Beta Z wedding as far as tradition than we really see in Data's Dead.
We get less.
Less is more. But anyway,
you get nothing at all when you're wearing it.
So I can see, I mean, I see why they didn't, because Star Trek's pretty much all about not talking about our religion. It's talking about alien religions. You know, we can make more commentary that way, but it was just, I thought if they were to go somewhere, it would be in a wedding situation like that.
And so then the last character I want to look at is Picard, and we'll kind of move on to some aliens and featured characters. But Daniel, two questions for Picard I want to ask you. One, you know, who watches the Watchers is your episode.
You mean the Picard?
It's right, that you enjoy. And so I know he has a lot to say there. So that's something, you know, for you to kind of expound on. But my second one is that as captain of the Enterprise, he governs, you know, all these different cultures who have religious beliefs. How do you think he did? You know, what's his role as captain in accommodating that we saw, of course. I mean, you can make it up too if you want to. But those are my two Picard questions for you.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I think Picard very squarely falls on one side of this argument. And I don't think, I mean, well, hey, you know, reach out to me. We can have a debate about it. But I do think Picard is very, very, he is one way about this whole thing. And he's made his feelings very clear on it. And
it's not an ugly word. You can say atheist.
Yeah, no, he is. He is for a lot of TNG, he is a mouthpiece. He is a mouthpiece for Roddenberry. So he's very humanist. He's very secular. He, you know, and he has these strong feelings, and it's great. And but then you see the way he deals with things like Worf, like Darren mentioned earlier, and he deals with all of these. He's a person that has to deal with multicultural, multi-ethnic, multi-religious people. And I think he does an amazing job. I really do. I mean, as this man who it also helps to me in my mind, canon wise, that he's an anthropologist, right? He understands that people or beings, however you want to say it.
Archaeologist.
I'm sorry. You know, archaeology. Right.
Jazzercisist, you know,
he understands that, you know, that beings come from all walks of life, and he respects that up to a point, which is fair. But he, I think generally he's a really great leader in that respect, in that he doesn't seem to judge anybody for that. He seems to let people do what they want, as long as, you know, of course, it's not affecting the crew in any negative way. I would say as far as like diversity and kind of inclusion goes, you're not going to get much better than Captain Picard. I can't. I mean, the only he gave Worf not even detention, just a written warning for murdering somebody on another ship, and that was it, because that was just part of his culture, part of his religion, part of his thing. So, you know, I'd say he's pretty good at that kind of stuff.
not only just killing a guy, he murdered the Klingon presidential candidate.
Yeah, exactly.
He is the Manchurian candidate.
Oh, Lordy. And though, Daniel, I do have to quibble, I don't think it was very tolerant of Picard to, like, throw away the god statue in Generations. That was, he did not care about those figures at all. What about you, Darren, with Captain Picard, about what his beliefs were? And was he ever challenged in those beliefs? Or maybe he wasn't. I'm always thinking of, like, Janeway. You know, she had that episode where she had to save Kess in season one or two, and she sort of had her very logical, scientific mind kind of a little challenged a little bit in that episode. I can't remember the title there. But
yeah, but Janeway also was really into finding out her spirit animal and Akujimoy and, you know, every other episode, but
it's just her way of flirting.
But oh, so we both hold this stone like with our hands together? No, Captain, we don't need. Oh, I thought that's how it was done. But you can learn more about that on our sister podcast, To the Journey.
To the journey.
But yeah, with Picard, the closest I can think of is when he is the Picard in Who Watches the Watchers, which I'm sure we'll talk a lot about. But there's that speech he gives where he's very upset that, from his point of view, that their presence is causing them to, in his words, like regress back into primitive superstition and paranoia, like making decisions off of what the gods want and things like that. And I think at the heart of that speech is, you know, I look at it as focusing on what religion can become in the hands of people who are more about what it can do for them. But again, yeah, I agree with Daniel. I mean, Picard isn't a religious man. He is the mouthpiece for Roddenberry and the most of humanist, you know, of that lens. But he's also very tolerant and understanding of all the other cultures. And I've seen other sci-fi shows do it a little more inclusive, where they, like Babylon 5, I think, had a great episode about religion where, who was it? I think it was...
They have several. I mean, I know this isn't the Babylon 5 podcast, but the first officer was a cultural Jew. However, when her father died, a rabbi came and asked why she never sat Shiva, and that was a very interesting episode. And then you had one where, because there was some episode where, like, they introduced the aliens to all, like, human religion.
That's the one I'm thinking of. Where
season one.
Yeah, it was at the... Was it the... Which alien was wanting to find out? Was it Shakar's people?
I can't remember. But, like, I remember Commander Sinclair is like, this is an atheist. And this
right,
is,
yeah. There's basically... It's supposed to feel like it's this line going on almost forever. Which was, you know, I think... It was very poetic in showing that, yeah, Earth is made up of many religions, and I'm glad they weren't just showing, oh, and here's, you know, America's religions, and here's, you know, no, it showed all these types of people. And I think that was very powerful. So, you know, as we're delving, or we're almost delving into, like, what would we see in the next series, but back to Picard, I think, you know, he also, as the captain, even if he was a very religious man, even if he was like the Sisko or something along that line, I think he would keep it apart because he is the captain. He needs to be representative of the ship and of the Federation, not of his personal beliefs.
And I think with Picard, he has, I don't know how to phrase this, I'll just say it and I'm probably wrong. But he has a very heavy belief system when it comes to the Prime Directive. I mean, he holds its tenet very sacred is probably the wrong word, but I'm going to use that word, you know, because he holds it like up here, you know, and there's folks who, you know, on his crew are like, I mean, I know it's a rule, whatever, you know. But he is sort of like, you know, this is a fundamental doctrine of who we are, you know.
The truth.
And so it's sort of, and it's sort of interesting, though, but of course he struggles with it many times, of course. But it's something that he sort of defends, believes very much in, and you know, fights to protect. And so I think that's a very interesting tenet of belief that at least we see from Captain Picard. Obviously not a religion, but it certainly is, whatever that is, a very strong part of his being that he puts a lot, invests a lot into. So I thought we would move on to some aliens, because as we say, you know, if you want to see any religion in TNG, you're pretty much going to see it with aliens. And so I just kind of made a list. You guys can either choose them yourselves or I'll throw some at you. So, Daniel, I know another episode that you're all about is Devil's Due. What is that episode? I mean, that's obviously, I mean, religion obviously is very part of that.
Beklar, that's what we got. That's what we're talking about, right?
Beklar.
What do we see there in that episode about religion, TNG?
Again, I do think that Star Trek in general, I would argue very strongly, and this is not what we're going to do tonight, but I would argue that Star Trek in general and TNG specifically has a very strong stance on religion. And again, we're bringing up Roddenberry, and I think this is where he was in his life. I mean, it was a journey for him from the 60s to the 80s, and he kind of cemented some feelings that he had early on, and whatever. Again, a whole nother topic. But the version of Star Trek that we got in TNG, I feel, is a very secular society, at least in Starfleet, this kind of thing. So we do explore spiritual, religious themes, which is great. And fantastic. But, you know, ultimately, there's an overlying message of, how would you say it? There's an overlying message of, don't have religion anymore, for whatever it's worth. It's such a something that doesn't exist anymore for humans. Everybody we've talked about so far has been either at least half alien, if not completely constructed out of parts and bits. So, you know, it is interesting to go through and
but
see.
But Daniel,
that.
I have parts and bits.
If do you I not?
Me.
So, you know, and this episode is very specifically, just like Who Watches the Watchers, very specifically about the dangers of religion. And, you know, maybe you don't take the same takeaway that I do out of TNG, but when you watch this episode, this is actually a warning of, like, the dangers of what does this kind of blind faith lead you to? What can it lead you to? It's a warning of, hey, just make sure that you know what you're getting into, right? If you're going to sign a 1,000-year contract with the devil, maybe you should read the fine print, at least, right? So I do like it. It's just a warning tale, right? For for human society, like, oh, we can, and I love that it's actually a positive message. That's kind of what I really get from this episode, is the fact that they're on trial. The deity, quote unquote, the deity, the god in this episode takes credit for all of the positive changes that the society makes in this episode. And it's kind of on, like, how can we prove that the society did this themselves? And it's actually up to people to kind of make their world better. And that's actually what I really take away from this episode. That's why I love this episode so much. It's like, no, you did those things. You fixed disease. You fixed poverty. You fixed all of these things. So that's what I love about this episode.
So that, because LeVar Burton, I mean, Geordi LaForge comes around and says, the power was yours.
It's yours. I was going to say that.
Well, this episode makes me wonder, though, what does God need with a geopolitical climate? What does God need with a planet?
It was the devil.
With the UN.
What does the devil need with... You didn't answer the question. But...
Oh, goodness. And any thoughts on Ardra and the role the devil played?
Yeah, no, just emulating what Daniel said, and it is a positive, and it is... It's interesting because it focuses everything into the character of Ardra. It's not so much about her followers. I mean, they could have very easily focus the episode on a religious zealot group that is all about Audra, and they're like, no, she's the, you know, she's, we signed this contract and we have to do it, and they're fighting, and you know, that would have been more of, I guess, what actually probably would have happened. But instead they focus it all on the character, and it's like, oh, well, what if she comes back herself and we put her on trial? Because we like putting things on trial. Okay, it's really our bread and butter here on Earl Grey. So, you know, be it sentience or the devil or the drumhead, I mean, we like our different times of trial. There are trials.
Now, Daniel, and I think rightly, mentioned that, you know, Star Trek and well, at least the Next Generation, though perhaps all of it, sort of says human religions go by the wayside. However, one episode where I think maybe that's the one exception is Journey's End, where you have the Native American planet, and you have, and I don't remember anyone's names, I apologize, but the tribe that lives on this planet that are Native Americans, I know they have names, you know, and I, it's been a while since I've seen the episode, so I don't want to say, you know, make any stereotypes, but I you know, they certainly talk about the power of living on the planet, and what it means to them to be part of that land, and certainly, you know, and I know, looking at you, Voyager, Star Trek doesn't have a great reputation for explaining Native American religious beliefs, in a very specific, instead of just making a wide stereotype. But anyway, I thought that was at least one that they threw out there, because they especially talked, you know, with Picard, linking him to their ancestral beliefs about, you know, Picard's ancestor and perhaps what that's calling Picard to do now. And so I thought that was at least one, you know, human example. Now, is this just setting up Voyager and Chakotay? Probably. But Darren, what'd you think at least about that one instance of religion or spirituality or whatever word we're supposed to use?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm looking it up right now, and it, unfortunately, the specific as it gets is North American, you know, Native Americans. So it's not very specific.
Canadian?
Could be.
I don't.
Could be Inuit, as far as we know. But yeah, it's trying very hard to say something. Whether or not it succeeds, that is the question. But no, I think in this, which again, this has been a while since I've watched this episode. Since it's not.
Yeah, and also let's you know, the episode's also about, like, hey, it's the Traveler and Wesley's a light ball and ba ba bum ba dum bum.
That
you didn't solve
true.
Anything. You didn't solve the episode. You just have Wesley going away as a light bulb. Anyway, go ahead.
But yeah, it's interesting to say that, you know, it's like always, this always happens to Picard, that he's put in these situations where he needs to make a decision and try to have it be the right one. And I don't even remember what decision did they do. Did they not leave and they just try to share the planet?
If I think what, you know, because there's a fight at the end.
Yeah.
Wesley presses the pause button. And I think actually the way it ends is that the Native American planet actually decides to be a Cardassian planet.
Right. They're like, we'll live under Cardassian rule, but we're going to live here no matter what.
Right. And I forget why the Cardassians agree to that, but for some reason they do.
Yeah, they forego Federation citizenship and remain under Cardassian control.
So, Daniel, anything to say about the tribe in this planet?
Nope. Okay. Not a whole lot to say there.
Because one of them was secretly the Traveler the whole time.
Oh my god.
And then suddenly Jimi Hendrix starts playing. Anyway. You know, we talked about, you know, both between the two of y'all in another episode, we've kind of talked about sort of great beings. So, I mean, we could talk about Q. I think we've kind of covered it. We could talk about Justice and the Ito, and why not? But I feel like we've sort of covered that before. I thought, you know, and Daniel, I'll pick on you again, because you're apparently the master of all these episodes here. The Outcast. Because while, and you've seen it obviously much sooner than I have, I don't know if the word religion is used, but I know the word doctrine is used, which is just someone pulling out of the source. Yeah, very clever writers, I got it. And so, in that society, and I don't know if that's a theocracy, and I'm using words very loosely here. or if that's just a heavy cultural of that society. But anyway, what would you say the role of doctrine in that episode is about?
Again, not if you're going to use that as a religious analogy, not painted well in that episode, right? It's essentially the force
Daniel, excuse me, that person seems very happy at the end. I don't know what you're talking about. A very happy ending. Yeah.
Again, it's actually another, that's a perfect example of how, if you want to take it as, I mean, there are many layers to that episode. And if you're going to go with the religious layer, it's just one of those times that it's like, I mean, it is villainous. It is in the wrong 100%. It is harmful and hurtful and painful to the citizens. And, you know, it's, I read more into the culture of that society than they do mention the word doctrine. Not as much as that one episode in Voyager
thinking about that with the dinosaurs,
the space brontosauruses. Yeah. But they do mention it. So, you know, you kind of have to go with it. It feels more culturally oppressive than religiously oppressive, although that those two kind of go hand in hand sometimes. But it's, you know, it's another example of TNG, like taking this, like, no, you know, you cannot take this wide-eyed view of everything and apply it broadly to everything. So, you know, I would use that as an example of this show kind of showing how, at least how we understand these concepts of religion and spirituality, can be harmful. Again, I'm trying to be as neutral as possible. And
Daniel, first things first, there is no neutral zone, remember?
Oh, God, forgot. So, you know, it's actually a good episode to look at in this context. Again, because like I say, it's not explicitly stated that it's for religious reasons. And in fact, I didn't even take that away from it the last time I watched it. I just saw it as like a cultural thing instead.
All right. And Darren, anything to say about The Outcast?
No, just I think Daniel covered all of that episode, but I think what you said, even though they're using terms like dogma and stuff, there are many episodes of Star Trek that aren't necessarily religious, but get into similar themes. They're just, it's not like this is a church and this is a bishop and this is a
steeple,
you know.
And when you open it, those are the people.
When you open the docking bay doors, they're all that. No.
Well, like for instance, and this is a Meta Trex thing, so, but like, you know, to stick to Earth, Buddhism, right? Is that a religion? You know, some people say yes, some people say no. A great line I heard, you know, not to make light of things, but I heard, you know, Buddhism thinks that their God is so great, he doesn't even have to exist. And so, you know, but that's why a lot of these things that we're talking about is, you know, religion. Am I necessarily talking about there is a great being and you will worship? No, I mean, it's very wide. That's why I think cultural and spiritual, whatever thesaurus you want to use, I think is fine. So, but go ahead, Darren.
No, that's what I was pretty much meaning, you know, that if there's, it's not necessarily always a one-to-one comparison, but then again, that's the best sci-fi.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so before we kind of wrap a bow on sort of the larger approach to TNG, is there any specific episodes or alien species or non-alien species that I've sort of not mentioned that you feel like was sort of a attempt in good or bad ways to do religion and TNG?
No, I think you covered all the bases. What I would just say, and one of the reasons Who Watches the Watchers is my favorite, one of my favorite episodes of TNG, is because of how it handles this subject. I do think it feels like the template. It is the groundwork. It's the constitution for how Star Trek handles religion. And I actually believe that if you take that way, it kind of does through the entire run of all of Star Trek, through Deep Space Nine. I mean, you can look at it through that lens. And I understand probably sometimes you're maybe a little stretching, maybe you're not. Again, this is my bias. But Who Watches the Watchers, to me, kind of really lays out how Star Trek views religion. You know, it's not hostile towards it at all. It's just that, you know, Picard is confronted with this entire thing. And he's like, ooh, the Picard. And, you know, he's like, no, I'm not worthy of being, worshipped. And no one is, essentially. And I think that's a beautiful sentiment. And I think that Star Trek handles it very beautifully in that episode. And I do hope that we get to see this continued, this kind of a reasoning, you know, like, again, even in Deep Space Nine, I feel like they handled it well. There are elements of religion, of course, because it's part of the human experience. There are elements of spirituality that we get to deal with. But on the other hand, there are parts of it that have been essentially removed from the equation. And right, that's great, right? If we can remove the hate and the bigotry and the intolerance from all of this stuff, and then just deal with the core of, well, what is and what isn't. And I think Star Trek does that fantastically. And I mean, these are, I don't know the answers. I mean, I have obviously opinions, but just, I don't know the answers.
Just turn the book upside down and tell me.
Yeah. I don't have answers. I am actually, believe it or not, I am not privy to the orb of religion or the orb of spirituality. And as strong as I feel about it, as strong as you guys feel about it, I don't know the answers, and you don't. And that's what Star Trek is so amazing at, is kind of exploring these things in different ways. I see these episodes and I'm like, yeah, oh, I see that one from my point of view. And then I'm like, well, that episode is kind of like, I can see it. I can see it from the other way. And it kind of opens my eyes to it. So I really hope that, just like every other issue, just not just religion, not just spirituality, not just politics, not just, you know, society, I hope that we get to see all of these different aspects in all of these different ways.
Sure. And I will have to correct you, Daniel. It would not be the, as I drink from my We the People mug, it would not be the Constitution. It would actually be the Declaration of Independence.
Oh, fair enough.
Rookie mistake, Daniel.
The Declaration of Independence is about the principles, whereas the Constitution is about the literal thing. But Darren,
Daniel,
you know,
we the people, in order to form a more perfect union,
see, that's the Constitution. You
establish
went,
justice and ensure. I'm just wanted you to get points for knowing the preamble.
That's no, you're just reading from the TOS.
I'm not
episode, the Omega Glory.
I memorized that. Schoolhouse
Darren,
Rock totally taught that to me.
We've completely forgotten your favorite episode, and I apologize. Please tell us what mask teaches us about religion.
Does it? I don't.
It's
maybe,
about the like the cultural the earth,
true,
of the sun and the moon gods.
Maybe in an Aztec, Mayan, Incan kind of way, but yeah.
No, I'm kidding. You can. But are there any aliens or episodes you feel like I missed, or did we at least hit most of them?
I think, you know, if some of our the new show was to go into some of our more established alien races, I think it would be interesting to see if there was a spiritual side to Cardassians, or, I mean, we know the Ferengi. I mean, they have their divine treasury, which is interesting, but
they have a lot of false prophets.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But, yeah, I think that's what I'd like to see more, though, is more exploring, like, the not that we need like a whole episode, but just seed it throughout of how these other cultures are impacted, and base it off of different religions, you know, of our planet. I mean, that would be really interesting to see. I mean, we already base the species off of, you know, different aspects of humanity. Why not take it another step further? So I think there's just much more to come, hopefully, in this aspect of Star Trek, you know, just enough to, as Daniel said, reflect that part of the human condition.
And I really think there's probably a whole lot more to say, but we won't, because there's not a lot of time left. But anyway, I will say, as I thought about this topic, you know, there is a lot to say, and we said some of it, and I'm sure there's more that people will say. And I'll just say two things, and I'll leave it to you all to do any closing arguments, though. I feel like you both have definitely made some good, great points already. I think the more I reflected, I think if you rated each Star Trek series about how much religion or religious stories or spiritual stories are, I think Next Generation would actually be at the bottom. I feel like Deep Space Nine probably be number one. You know,
yeah,
obviously, I suppose. I think Voyager has a lot. I mean, Neelix has a lot. Janeway's, you know,
B'Elanna.
I mean, I think Voyager would almost be two. TOS throws it in every now and then. Very, I mean, you would think, but I, you know, whether it's spreading circuses, whether it's, you know, it's not a lot, but they just every now and then will poke it in there. I mean, of course, you have literal gods walking around, so I guess that's pretty much every other episode. I would say maybe TNG and Enterprise are about the same in about how much they reference. I don't think Enterprise really gave a lot of relation.
Data, when Q asks you if you're a god, you say yes.
It's actually, you know, it's so funny that you mentioned that. That's, and it's one of the reasons, one of the many myriad of reasons, actually, I love TNG the most is its take on this subject specifically. So, yeah, if you rate them that way, it's a really interesting look.
Yeah, and the more I thought about it, I mean, of course, you know, I think, Daniel, you've already said it better than I can about sort of where the Roddenberry approaches the TNG. And sort of that, you know, of course, he set, not that he wrote every episode or did, but, you know, once you sort of set the foundation, that's where people generally go from. And so you sort of explained it. And, you know, his belief, of course, was that humans would outgrow religion. And that's why we only get aliens that have any sort of religious belief. I mean, and pretty much the only thing I would say is that, you know, I think it's an interesting part of Star Trek, that we can discuss and we'll always discuss, whether it's politics or sex or however else, you know, Star Trek treats different subjects. Though I will say I don't need to have a series that reinforces what I believe. I think, you know, it's cool to have a series like, yeah, no, they don't touch on what I believe at all, but they're still telling good stories and I think it's cool, you know? And so, but I do think it is good to have those references. And that's why I feel like religion is such a, not the greatest word to use when it comes to Next Generation. I don't know that I found the word. Spiritual, cultural tenets, personal tenets of whatever, you know, in TNG, but I think it's kind of maybe what we've tackled today. So, but any, Darren, you have any closing thoughts here?
I think just to reiterate kind of the underlying, one of the underlying things we spoke of is just like you said, Philip, there weren't a lot of one-to-one comparisons in Next Gen, but like I said, when talking about Data, it's the subtle moments where you're getting to the heart of what people believe, be it a cause, be it a way of life, a way of thinking, a way of behavior. And a lot of those components, you know, work themselves into, I guess, organized religion, air quotes on my pad. But, you know, I think that those are the best moments in Star Trek, is when things like that are subtly woven in and spoken on, not so much, you know, let's put the devil on trial.
Well, quote unquote, religion is not the only thing we've been talking about this week. Here's what else you may have missed this week on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room.
You know, Star Trek All Access gives you a great acronym, though.
STAR!
STAR, yeah.
Yes.
STAR!
Yeah, the upward angle on the... Yeah, totally get it.
The orb.
I don't know if obsessive love is really love, because it's... I think it's more about possession. Yeah, and for Dukat, she's a possession of his, not really a relationship of his.
The 602 Club.
But yeah, Evan Peters has way too much fun with this character. I mean, he's really embracing it, and just always brings a smile to my face when I see him.
Saturday Morning Trek.
The 30 seconds that we spent on Scotty singing probably could have been used with a really fun, why are all these women in security uniforms standing around us?
Rather than just, you're more handsome than ever.
Yeah, that, what was that about?
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
You can listen to every show on the network at Trek.fm with links for iTunes, streaming services, and a direct download link. This week, World Grey is brought to you by Audible.com. This is a great way for you to read all of the books you want to read but never have time for. Audible is always expanding, with over 150,000 titles to choose from. There are classics, current bestsellers, and famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive and Federation. Audible has something for everyone. Now, as a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to try out Audible yourself. So give it a try today. Catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read. To support Trek FM, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm. Thank you, Audible, for supporting Earl Grey and Trek FM. If you are a weekly listener and would like to directly help Earl Grey, please consider becoming a patron of Trek FM. At patreon.com/trekfm, you can choose a pledge level and receive rewards for becoming a Trek FM patron. You'll be inside the observation lounge of our network, able to participate in our monthly patron roundtable podcasts, and supporting the production of all of our great content. We would like to take this moment to thank our current patron associate producers, Stephen Boyd and Ron Sarna. Thank you for supporting Earl Grey. Connect with other Trek FM listeners on our Facebook discussion group called The Babel Conference, found through the Facebook search field, or like the facebook.com/trekfm page for show updates and announcements. The network is also on Twitter, @TrekFM.
All right, Darren, when you're not telling us when Minsaka is coming, where can people find you?
It's Corgano. Corgano is coming. No. Masaka's already here. She's table for one right over there. No, they can find me on Twitter under username Dr. Sci-Fi, DrSciFi.
And Daniel, if people want you to answer the question of who actually does watch The Watchers, where can people find you?
Well, I've got to tell you, Philip, it's an infinite regression. So technically, nobody ever ends up watching The Watchers. Listen, it doesn't matter. They can find me on Twitter, @OneUpDan. That's the number one, not the word.
All right. And if people want to talk to me about really the separate episode I'll do personally about the Edo and Justice, they can find me on Twitter as well, @NCPublicServant. That's NC. Or no kidding, with a C. I will talk to you about justice.
Kidding spelled with a K. Phillip.
Look, my spiritual belief, Darren, is that kidding is spelled with a C. Where's the tolerance? All right. Well, guys, I'm really going to go rewatch Rightful Heir. I think that's actually seems like there was a lot more than I thought about that when I mentioned that. So until next week, make it so.
Engage.
Live long and prosper.
Fire.